This Do Lectures episode features founder of Monkston Knitwear, Anna Felton, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2012.
So I'm going to talk about a knitwear brand called Monkstone Knitwear that's based on a farm in West Wales, and the journey on how I got here. I've been with the Do team since day one, and the development of Do has just been mind-blowing because of everybody that joins us every year, which means there's quite a lot of pressure on me to do a really, really good talk. I've did the finishing touches to the talk last week. We did a shoot for a magazine with Claire Hyatt at the Hyatt factory. And I'd kind of done my bit and everyone was in the right places. And I suddenly just sort of sat back and found myself feeling really proud of actually working for brands that are really, really doing like amazing things and actually sort of really sort of kicking ass and manufacturing again in the UK. So I work for a number of beautifully minded companies and ones that I really, really do believe in. I guess I realised I was out on my own when I finally handed in my final collection at university, and after many sleepless nights, which some people in the room will have witnessed, of sewing through fingers and, I don't know, all those kind of, those magical moments you try to forget about. So my tutor was a huge inspiration to me, and really pushed me into my design skills and an ethic of work that I feel I've kind of really carried on from him. I came to Wales about 5 years ago after working for quite a few lifestyle brands, and I came to work for Howie's, a brand that's still really, really dear to my heart. And I was off the job by David from what sounded like the windiest, rainiest place in the UK. And I took the job, and I guess my Welsh journey kind of began. My best friend Jo, who's also in the film, always calls and is like, "Why aren't you in London? You know, you're really missing out on all this fun. And come on, you know, by the time you get here, we'll have all gone." And I feel like I'm kind of part of many journeys here that I can't really turn my back on now. So I'm going to sort of see them through. I've learned so much, and I still kind of feel like I'm really at the learning stages. And so it's been a massive opportunity to work for the companies that have taught me everything, really. I'm learning every day, and the constant up and downs of everything. It's a real kind of mix of good teams, and, you know, I'm very, very lucky. So I wouldn't lie to everyone. You know, I do get really frustrated. I have 6 jobs to pay for one dream that I really want to do. And I'm writing lists the whole time. I'm always trying to do things better. And I'm not sure even if what I'm doing is right or good, but I know that it's just something that a lot of freelancers go through, and I'm sure quite a few of you in the room will feel the same. You tend to bounce ideas off, you know, in the car when you're driving along, 4 a.m. in the morning, you know, or out when I'm running, or in my case, when I'm feeling sheep. And I've learned the hard way many times, but I know if you really, really do want to do it, then, you know, you can with a lot of luck and support, and it's good. I tend to ignore the advice because I do get told to slow down a lot, and I am probably doing far too much. I probably could do with a bit of headspace. but last year, I ignored even more people, and I sort of did take time out, but I took time out to run the New York Marathon. I pushed it and pushed it, and I did it because I wanted to know what my body and my mind were capable of. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done, and it did put a lot of things in context. I remember at mile 19, I'd sort of caned all my Kendall mint cake, and I was just at the bottom of, you know, I didn't have anything left, and I'd already sort of done a sneaky text, you know, I'm well on time, you'll see me at the finish line, and then it just went downhill from there. The only thing I had left was some flapjack, which wasn't the best thing to eat. So yeah, ill on the side of the road and all the rest of it. But, you know, just kept on going. But as my boyfriend likes to remind me that, you know, your body and mind are very much connected, and you use one to aid the other and vice versa. So without the amazing teams I have around me, I wouldn't be able to do, and I wouldn't be able to tell everyone about Do. Without my amazing friends and my family that support all the dreams that I've ever had, I wouldn't be standing here. And without Rich, I probably wouldn't eat my dinner or even just go for a walk to clear my head. So, and also without the amazing bosses that have supported me all the way through as well, I wouldn't be able to just generally do stuff. I've learned a lot about the ways of a farm, and it is hard, and I do struggle, but, you know, I do it because it's something that I really, really believe in. It teaches you a lot about the things in life you also take for granted. Building a brand, not just around wool, but around a farm, and one I have a lot of respect for. Dennis Reed, Rich's dad, is a wealth of knowledge, and he's kept a diary every day since the age of 15. It's not necessarily about emotions or feeling, it's just about farm life and everything that goes with it, from harvesting to wildlife. And it is just truly remarkable to think that somebody has logged such an amazing journey. The older generations of farmers have been a massive, massive support to me, and growing this network is really, really key to the brand. So the beginnings of Monkstone. So how many people are wearing knitwear? My knitwear? So, and how many of you are wearing knitwear that's made in the UK? Good. I'd actually expect that if you are wearing knitwear, it is probably most likely from the UK and quite possibly Wales. There's 11 million sheep alone in Wales. And as I started venturing out to sheep markets and talking to all the other local farmers, I got consistently frustrated. And I got really really angry with an industry I've worked in for many years. I got really frustrated and saddened by lots of facts that I was hearing from farmers, from burning fleeces, and fleeces that are of really high quality in the UK. We have general good standards of welfare for our animals, and also flock quality is really good here. So these fleeces are often sat for years in barns and stables. And it was just costing so much for those farmers to have the wool sorted and shorn on a yearly basis. They just weren't getting enough money to warrant, you know, sending that on. The wool production in the UK has declined in 17 million kilograms since the late 90s. And on average, each sheep carries 5 kilograms of usable wool. So when you do the maths, you realise this is quite a huge amount. Our biggest overseas customer is China. And manufacturing in China is obviously quite a big deal. While working for companies and designing, I was blinded. And I have to say, I was really embarrassed. I would buy yarns from China that had in fact come from the UK, from our sheep, shipped to China, dyed, they'd use chemicals, they fused them with man-made fibres, and then they'd sent them back to us. So like our food miles, our clothes miles have done exactly the same. We're technically buying fleeces from farmers for as much as well as little as 76p per kilo, and then shipping them to China, and then selling them here in the UK for sometimes hundreds of pounds. It just didn't seem to add up to me. Manufacturing in the UK is a current issue and something I feel really strongly about. Hyatt Denham's been a wonderful project to be involved in, and bringing this factory to life and celebrating the masters at their work and true craftsmanship has been a total inspiration. So I don't see why we should just stop at Denham. I'm also really, really thankful for the factory I work with in Wales. It's a family business that has just been passed down through generations and generations. And their knowledge has just been absolutely priceless to me. I also use a lot of hand knitters, and to see their creations happen in such a traditional way is just, it's just really lovely. And I think it's something UK should be really proud. You know, we've got a lot to offer. I can't believe that when I started out, I couldn't get my fleeces spun or washed in Wales. And I just didn't have enough wool to warrant them opening up projects for me. And I really, really hope that in time this can change. So part of my thing that I want to do with Monkstone is set up the Monkstone Project, where donations of fleeces from local farmers, and they'll actually get 5% of each sale of the final garment price. So technically, they'll actually get what their wool is worth. And it'll start paying them back, and they can pay back into the welfare of their animals and their own flocks. So I hope it'll quite be a good development scheme. Each season, and in fact, to be honest, almost every day, I'm learning from what's around me and the farm. and I'm proud to admit it, that literally blood, sweat and tears have been shed for this cause. The births, the deaths and the highs of farming, quite often the lows, are all part of the cycle and the systems that I'm sure I'm going to come across each year. And from a designer point of view, it's quite a rare privilege to be so close to the source that I'm working with. I guess it's like source to sale. The design process is affected and influenced by the farm itself and the flocks that we have there. The weather, the stock numbers, the wool types, and even losses and disease come into play when I'm designing each season. You never really know what coloured lambs you're going to have or if the ram escapes into the field and gets with the wrong ewes, so you have all sorts of issues. The farm is a relatively small farm, but it does operate on the principles of good husbandry and animal welfare. And my knowledge and the farm, it's just growing all the time. My eyes have definitely been opened to a large number of things I never thought I would even come across as a designer. The realities of coalface farming and agriculture is just been jaw-dropping for me. It impacts our world, and the customer detachment of the product really sits on our supermarket shelves. The occasional times when I'm sort of driving along and I can see the cows, walking from milking parlour to milking parlour, I can honestly say, like, the labour and energy and sacrifice that those animals go through their whole lives is quite amazing and quite saddening. But we've seen a growth, I guess, in the last decade of some really good quality trade and some local produce. Really, really traceable things. And I think, it's a really, really important thing for us to grow. So kind of, it takes me on to kind of where I would put that with sort of clothing. I guess like to dress like you don't care, it is kind of a trend. And, that idea of, you just threw it on. But you all did kind of think about it today. I guess you all dressed so you wouldn't get wet. So if you put this into relationships with styles and trends, and expand those thoughts to sort of sourcing and traceability and the production, incorporate this design, it's not just the product, but the system and the cycle that it comes from. On one hand, there's a price to pay for this, but you get what you pay for. And on the other hand, the dividends and the social and environmental and ethical relief would be strong throughout the UK. If we pay more for these products, our animals, and we could start something quite amazing. We struggle with price, but when it comes to buying in the UK, it means a lot. But to me, it's the way it should be, to buy quality that lasts and you can pass it down, to work with the hand knitters, the manufacturers, the craftsmen and the farmers. We can really see a production line in quite a magical way. I do fear fear many days of the week, and I worry that I'm a young girl just kind of out to make stuff. I make a lot of mess, but I do suffer from OCD, so I do clear it up very quickly. I do quite a lot, and I probably should slow down. But I love what I do, and I know I've probably come across as being pretty nuts, but you can really do the things that you love. And this is a little film about, why we do things that we do at the farm.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.